Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Hafa day and aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. And today we are traveling outside of Hawaii to another one of our Pacific Island neighbors. I'll give you a hint. It's a U.S. territory in Micronesia, has a population of just over 165,000, and is known for its barbecue, well, and of course, marine life. If you haven't guessed it, today we are visiting Guam, more specifically, the amazing Underwater World Aquarium. First up is May Balahaja, who works in the Education Department at Underwater World. May has been working there for several years, first in the husbandry department and now in education. Born and raised in Guam, welcome to the show, May.
Hi, thank you.
So, very excited to talk a little bit about Underwater World. I had a wonderful experience participating in some events at the aquarium in July. And why don't you first tell us a little bit about the aquarium?
Yeah, sure. So, Underwater World's been on Guam for about 15 years. It's the only aquarium on Guam, and it has one of the longest walk-through tunnels in the world.
Excellent. And what kind of marine animals do you guys house there?
Oh, we have many. We have from the smallest fish to the longest shark we have there is the nurse shark. We got a couple of reef sharks, giant groupers. There's just so many.
Yeah, it's really nice and kind of a surprising place. One of the things that I really loved about it is, you know, in looking at the shark tank that you guys have there from a top-down perspective where I was giving a talk in July, you can really see the variety of species of sharks and large fish. I mean, it's a pretty immersive experience, wouldn't you say?
It is. It's wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the aquarium.
Oh, so currently I'm working two departments. So I work at the husbandry department as an aquarist in training. I'm in charge of several tanks. I maintain the exhibits, make sure the fish are healthy, the water quality reaches its standards, and then I'm slowly transitioning into the education department. Right now I'm an education associate, and there I'm in charge of field trips and outreach programs.
Excellent. So that must be kind of a rewarding thing, working on the field trips. Do you have a lot of students from the area coming in, or is it more international students?
Mostly the local schools here.
Excellent. And what kind of things do you do with the students when they come in on the field trips?
Also, we give them, like, tours of the aquarium, talk about the animals there, we talk about how some of them came to Underwater World, where we get our fishes, and stuff like that.
Excellent. And I understand you guys just got a command center as well, so that's really exciting. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. So our command center is the newest, I guess, exhibit that we have, basically a land base for research, the place where people on shore can see what's happening on ship. Has this huge screen. It's lovely.
And the command center is connecting with a lot of live science that's happening in Guam waters. Can you tell us about some of the expeditions or things that you've shown so far through the command center?
Sure. So recently, the NOAA Okeanos Explorer just did a dive by the Marianas Trench. So we've been streaming that one live so far. So we plan on just streaming all future expeditions that happen around our area.
And what's been how's the public been in terms of, like, reception towards the command center? I mean, do you get a lot of people stopping by and asking questions? Are they interested in these dives?
Yeah, so once it's streaming live and people come and they're just standing there, when we mention, like, the one recently from the NOAA expedition where they did the Marianas Trench, they're standing there and they're watching it live, and then we mention, like, oh, that's at the Marianas Trench, and they're like, wow, and they get really excited.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to be able to see what's right in your backyard when previously that type of visibility wasn't available. Have you had any of the field trips from the students come in and look at the command center yet?
We've had, yes. So a lot of the local communities, like the clubs and stuff, would come and they would do like teleconferencing with the scientists on the ship, and that one's great. Like the kids have all their questions ready for the scientists, and they're really excited to hear what they have to say.
And when you're working with the ships, I know you've done quite a bit with NOAA Okeanos Explorer, but I also know that Schmidt Ocean Institute has done some work with you guys. Do you have plans to also work with some of the local scientists at University of Guam or other ships that come through?
Yes, we do. Actually, we've had several scientists working at our command center, teleconferencing, directing the ROV drivers on which samples to bring up shore, up to the surface, and yeah.
Such an exciting place to work. What's your favorite thing about working at Underwater World?
My favorite, like in general, working at Underwater World, I would have to say, is the dive feeds that we put on. So we actually get in the tunnel and we feed the sharks by hand. So that would be my favorite.
And does that allow the public to participate in that as well?
They're allowed to see, so they could come and watch us from the tunnel while we're inside the water, and we put on a good show for them.
I bet. And what kind of opportunities does the aquarium offer in terms of technological advancement? I mean, this command center and being able to see some of these dives in real time is a huge advancement or add-on to the aquarium.
It is. So as far as research, the technology now, we're able to go to parts of the ocean that have never been discovered, telecommunication, and like you said, the technology advancement has allowed us to bring this groundbreaking research to the local community as it's happening.
And do you also offer, do your own research at the aquarium? Are people working with the animals that you house there?
Yes, we do. So everybody in the husbandry department, basically we all just take care of the animals.
Excellent. And do you have any scientists that are working with you guys in the husbandry department on the different fish and stuff that you house there?
We have a couple. Like, if we have questions and stuff, then we would go to, like, the scientists, like, stuff regarding coral. There's Dave Burdick, who's a local coral biologist here on Guam. He helps a lot.
Excellent. It's great. And I know the command center is in conjunction with also this new deep sea exhibit you have, and I got to see a little bit of a preview, but what types of things are you offering in the deep sea exhibit? What is there to see?
All right. So right now we have the command center. We have a diorama which exhibits the deep sea hydrothermal vent communities. In the future, we are planning to add in a walkthrough of the Marianas Trench exhibit, where visitors can immerse themselves in a scale model, which illustrates the magnitude of the size of the Marianas Trench. We're also going to be adding like interactive educational displays for children and adults alike.
It's so nice to have an aquarium in Guam, because having the trench there is really a pinnacle of marine research for so many scientists around the world. I mean, do you think a lot about the Mariana Trench and having the deepest part of the ocean right in your own backyard? Like, what does that mean for the education programs that you offer in this new center?
It's like a bonus. It's great. It's actually Like, it's just exciting. Just, it's in our backyard, and, you know, like, people, scientists are coming, and they're discovering stuff, and it's in our backyard. It's just, it's a great feeling,
and
it's great to, you know, like, share with the kids on what's going on in our backyard.
Yeah. Have you learned a lot from these scientists coming through so far and had an opportunity to interact directly with them?
Me personally, no, I haven't interacted with most of them, but some of the other husbandry staff have.
Excellent. And what live streams do you have planned for the future? I mean, is there anything coming up that you want to share with us?
Yeah, we plan on streaming all future expeditions for NOAA and the Schmidt Institute. There's an expedition coming up with the Falkor ship,
yep,
who will be conducting in our region later this year. So we're excited for that one. And we would like to particularly focus on research that's being done in our area.
Excellent. And any final thoughts or things you want to share about the education program or the husbandry department?
Yeah, sure. The husbandry department is great to be at, and the education department is awesome as well.
So an all-around positive yeah. experience. Well, that's yeah. amazing. Thank you so much for your time, May. I look forward to you seeing more exciting content at the center, and especially with the Command Center and the new deep sea exhibit. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Underwater World staff.
Thank you.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Larkin really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a timeout for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool to call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. With us now is Andrea Pierce, who has been at Underwater World in the husbandry department for the last few years. Welcome to the show, Andrea. Andrea, do we have you?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, can hear you now. We lost you there for a second.
So glad you could join us today.
Now, I have to apologize. I completely missed the email that you sent a few minutes ago. So why don't you first tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. So in October, I will have been at Underwater World for 5 years now. So I came over right after I graduated college. I had done a semester in Australia, and the climate is very similar and different, or the same types of fish species. And I saw the job online and thought, hey, that sounds like fun. So I applied and got the job and moved out here without ever even having been on Guam before.
Wow, that's a bold move.
It was, but it paid off. I thought I'd come out here for a year or two and get my feet wet in the industry and then move back to the States. And here I am almost 5 years later. So. And I keep getting moved up with the company, so it's been a great move for me.
That's such a well-rounded and interesting trajectory. How do the reefs in Australia compare to the ones in Guam?
You know, I was there in 2011, so it's a little bit different now. Reefs everywhere are looking a little bit worse for the wear, including Australia. But in general, there's a lot of the same types of species. We're both Pacific species, so a lot of the same fish and corals are found on the Great Barrier Reef that are also found here. Guam's really a hot spot for corals and all types of marine species. So we get a lot of the same types of reefs that the well-known reefs like the Great Barrier Reef also have.
Excellent. And tell us a little bit about your role at Underwater World. What is a day in your life look like? I mean, what are you doing on the day-to-day basis?
Sure. So now I'm the husbandry manager, so I work on a huge variety of things, ranging from hiring and training new staff. One of the other things I do is I work with some of our more difficult species here. So I'm in charge of the corals here at Underwater World. We have three coral tanks. We have a hard coral, soft corals, and an anemone tank. So I work on those a lot. So my day-to-day routine focuses a lot on those. And then we also have coral breeding trays. A little bit later, I think I'll get a chance to talk about the organization SeaCorps that we work with. So working with corals is a big part of my job, but also the administrative side, hiring people, training people, all of that stuff. But we have a huge range of species here at the aquarium, ranging from the monitor lizards to our sharks. So on a day-to-day basis, you never know what pops up. Our job is very fluid, so I kind of get to do a little bit of everything and oversee just the husbandry department in general.
Well, that keeps things interesting for sure. And, you know, a lot of us who haven't had a chance to have an aquarium or maybe, you know, get a behind the scenes, what does taking care of a coral tank look like? Like, what do you have to do to maintain the health of these species?
You know, taking care of aquariums in general is fairly difficult. A lot goes into it that people don't really think about, but in particularly for corals. Corals are very difficult to take care of. They're very sensitive animals, particularly when they're in their smaller stages. So a great deal goes into taking care of them. First of all, they need a very particular setup to live in. You can't just throw corals in any old home aquarium and expect them to survive. They need very specific lights and water conditions. The water has to be very specific parameters and very clean for the corals to thrive in. We have complex filtration systems such as protein skimmers. We have a lot of flow going in there. We monitor the water quality several times a week where we can adjust and make additions as needed. But luckily for us, we live somewhere where we can pump in fresh salt water. Most aquariums aren't so lucky. And I interned at the Denver Aquarium, and I saw those aquarists carrying 50-pound bags of salt in and making their own salt water. So we at least have that going for us here. So that makes taking care of the corals and the other animals a little bit easier on us, at least.
Absolutely. And it's kind of nice to have that salt sea connection. I mean, being so close to the ocean.
Exactly.
And yeah, I agree. Corals are very sensitive, high maintenance animals, but all the more beautiful for it. And do you see there's a difference between the hard corals and the stony corals and soft corals that you take care of and the anemones? I mean, which ones, how does that differ in terms of how you take care of them?
Well, first of all, if you bump a hard coral, it doesn't recover so well. Anemones, you can step on, you can do whatever you want with them, and they're just fine.
But this is not an advertisement in the public. Just
no,
if you see an anemone in the ocean, do not step on it.
This is true, mainly because also you'll get stung, so I would not recommend that to anyone.
Yeah.
But no, in general, when we're cleaning the tanks, hard corals are obviously a lot more fragile. And, I mean, we have to remember, and guests should remember, or listeners on your show should remember, too, these corals take so long to grow. Yeah. These corals are so small, yet they've been growing for years. So particularly with the hard corals, you really just take such particular care with each individual one because they've taken years to get to that point. So obviously the hard corals, because of that, are a little bit more difficult to take care of, but they're all pretty difficult in the relative spectrum.
And do you have a favorite coral species or favorite animal that you like to take care of in the aquarium?
Ooh, favorite coral species. Well, I like the ones that I have essentially raised, that we've collected their eggs and sperm, which we'll talk about a little more later, but obviously, those ones I have a particular attachment to. So, like our species of Acropora digitifera that I've raised are probably one of my favorites. But as far as species at the aquarium, I've been fortunate enough to help with the turtle strandings and rescues here on Guam recently. So I really got into that within the past year or so. It's just really cool to be able to get in the rescued or rehab turtle and then be able to be the one that goes out and releases them into the ocean later. So that's become a recent favorite species of mine.
Well, such a rewarding process. And are they mostly green sea turtles that you're getting there, or do you get other species?
Nope, there are other species around Guam, but all of our rescues and rehabs have been green sea turtles.
Excellent. And you bringing the rescues, the rehabilitated animals into the aquarium before releasing them, or do they go to a separate facility?
So it's actually at the aquarium. It's in one of the hotel parking lots. We have a quarantine facility. So they're brought in there because we don't want them to be around our animals, which are quarantined. It just risks spreading disease or parasites or what have you. So we bring them into our quarantine facility, and we have tanks that we specifically have reserved in case we need to be able to house a turtle for a while.
Talk about multitasking the facility in the hotel parking lot. I love that.
Yep, they're great. They're great letting us have that space. I mean, space in downtown Tumon comes at a premium, so it's awesome that they let us have that space down there.
Absolutely. And, you know, do you ever get interest from people coming to the aquarium, you know, in terms of looking at the husbandry and what you're doing to take care of the tanks and the animals? Or are they mostly interested in just seeing the animals and walking through?
Oh, no, we definitely get people that are more interested in what we have going on behind the scenes. We do behind-the-scenes tours where you get a little sneak peek of what we do. It's in our we call it the middle room, but it's just a backspace area that we have where we culture our live foods and where we culture our corals and stuff. So guests can do that behind-the-scenes tour and just get a little sneak peek of what we do. But, yeah, I think it's just a general curiosity that people have, like, what is beyond these aquariums? So we do get a lot of interest from the public about that.
Well, that's great. And I know you're working mostly in the aquarium facility with the corals, but how are the corals looking in Guam? I mean, you have a pretty large reef system there right outside of the aquarium. How are those corals looking?
You know, the reefs in Guam aren't doing very good. The corals are bleaching, and the human impacts have caused the reefs to decline in health over the years. Actually, a colleague of mine, Lori Raimundo, who works over at University of Guam, was recently featured in an article in the Washington Post, and she titled it, "I Cried Right Into My Mask." Scientists say Guam's reefs have bleached for over 4 years straight. So this article was basically focusing on, like, she has been in this field for years and years and years, and it's just looking really bad recently. This is a feeling most of us have. Some estimates say over 50% of the local corals have died with even more bleaching, because bleaching doesn't necessarily mean that the corals have died. They can bounce back from bleaching. But in general, the reefs are declining, but there's lots of programs out there that are working to help the reefs bounce back, and there's a lot of local public awareness programs that are going around saying, hey, these are some things that you can do to help these awesome coral reefs right in your own backyard. So while they're not doing that great, we are working towards helping them bounce back.
Sure, a sobering and, you know, important message. And, you know, I think there's a fine balance between being realistic about what's going on and also having a positive attitude. It seems that you guys are doing that. What kind of programs are there in Guam that are working on helping to conserve and better improve the reef conditions?
There's a lot. I mean, ranging from high school marine biology programs where, you know, classes go out and simply clean up trash from the reefs. And then there's more in-depth programs where locals and scientists just are working towards improving the reefs. There's a new program called Eyes of the Reef. And basically, that's where anybody can learn how to report reef impacts, such as coral bleaching, coral abnormalities, algae blooms, and other reef impacts. And basically, it's all online. So anyone can go out, be snorkeling, check out the reef, see something that just isn't quite right, and be able to report it online, which is really, really great, because having the local population here to help us monitor things is just such a great help, because there's only so many coral biologists on island. We can't be everywhere at once and monitoring all the reefs at the same time. So that's a really great program that's also getting locals aware of what's going on and, you know, invested in their reefs in their backyard.
Yeah, I think that program actually started here in Hawaii, so it's exciting to see it have some legs and move elsewhere in the Pacific.
Yeah, and it's worked in Hawaii, so we're hoping it works here, too. There's a lot of people just working on general coral research at the University of Guam. Like, they partner with us for our in-water nursery and have some staghorn fragments out there that they hope to plant on the reef. And then, of course, the main organization that I work with is SeaCor, which stands for Sexual Coral Reproduction. And they're a great foundation, and we've worked with them 4 years in a row, and they have a large presence here on Guam now as well.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit more about the SeaCor organization and how that ties into Underwater World.
Sure. So SeaCor is just an awesome organization that I've been lucky enough to partner with for several years now. And they're doing great work around the world. Actually, our curator is going to be doing a workshop either now or very soon in Curaçao. So he's traveling now. But basically what they do is they set up workshops all over the world, in the Caribbean, in Mexico, in the Philippines here, and just basically try to get people invested, local stakeholders, local scientists, and just say, hey, this is what's happening on our reef, and here's what you can do. So we had a spawning workshop here, and it happens every July. Actually, next year we're talking about having it in May, but basically we revolve it around when the local species are spawning. So there was this workshop where you know, people from the Aquarium of the Pacific came out, and some people from SeaCor here on island, and some PhD students from University of Guam, Salmon Marine, worked with us. And basically what we did is we collected the eggs and sperm from corals that are spawning naturally on the reefs here. So it's really awesome. You get to go out diving at night and see this awesome phenomenon that most people don't even realize is happening. And we collect these eggs and sperm and basically settle them onto tiles that SeaCor has developed. And then these corals can grow on these tiles until they're bigger. But it's just a really great program, and it really helps to get everyone involved. And SeaCor has done such a good job of just raising public awareness in general.
And do you share these programs with the visitors that come to the aquarium? Because, like you said, not a lot of people know even what coral spawning is. You know, like, I don't think a lot of people realize the cool reproduction that happens with coral reefs.
Right. I mean, some people think that they're just plants and don't have all of the capabilities that most animals have and stuff. Some of the things that we do here is we show, like, a video about SeaCor in our little play area for kids. It's a great video that they came out with that illustrates coral spawning to children. But we are looking to develop a specific exhibit that exhibits these corals that we have raised from eggs and sperm and raised since they were just gametes. So that's in the works. But for right now, the way guests can learn about our SeaCor corals is they can see it on that behind-the-scenes tour that I had previously mentioned. Mm-hmm. So they can see our coral breeding trays where we have those corals at.
And once you grow the corals, are you putting them back in the ocean or are you keeping them in the aquariums?
Actually, that's the best part. So actually, we do put them back in the ocean. We put some back in July from the previous year, and that's super awesome. And they're still very small at this point, but they are attached to the tiles. So we put the tiles back onto the reef. So those species were Acropora digitifera and Acropora circulosa. So they were a year old and only a few centimeters, but we're really hoping that that can just give the reefs a jump start that they need to help our coral reefs rebuild. We focus on corals that grow fast and are more reef builders, so more of the keystone species. But then also something that was really, really cool is we had some guests out from Aquarium of the Pacific for the workshop, and one of their employees, Sandy, had planted a coral back on the reef the year before, and she was actually able to find it.
Well, that's kind
of
fun.
So that's like a one in a million chance. We knew a general idea where it was, but she was able to find the coral that she replanted and get to see it growing happy and healthy on the reef here in Guam. So we do outplant the corals, and we are able to find them and know that they're doing well. And they really are, you know, as small as it is, making an impact on the reefs here.
Well, that's amazing. And so what advice do you have for listeners and for aquarium goers in how they can better protect these corals when they see small, you know, maybe one-year-old corals out on the reef?
I mean, just in general, protecting the oceans in general is going to help these corals. I mean, the corals we can't expect to survive and thrive unless we're protecting our oceans first. So my best advice is do things like pick up your trash at the beach. If you see trash, pick it up. It's something easy that anybody can do. Recycle, conserve water, all of these things. Just helping to protect our oceans in general is really going to have a direct impact on these corals. But as far as specifically the corals, watch where you walk. Watch where you fin if you're snorkeling. I mean, it breaks my heart to think of people stepping on the reefs when they don't even know that they're there.
Yeah.
Look down where you're stepping, because you could take one step and crush a coral that's been growing for 10 years or more. So in an instant. So my biggest advice to people in the water is watch where you're finning, watch where you're kicking, watch where you're walking. There might be little corals that have just started to grow themselves and establish themselves right below your feet.
Well, Andrea, I wish you the best of luck with this program. It sounds really exciting, and I hope when Falkor comes back to Guam, I can come take a look at some of these amazing corals.
Of course, we would love to have you.
Well, thank you so much for making some time. Don't go away, because we have more Underwater World right after this break.
You've gone to protests, written letters, even considered chaining yourself to a tree. But saving the world is not easy at all. Fortunately, saving a life is. And when you donate one pint of blood, you can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal. Today we are connecting with Underwater World all the way across the ocean in Guam. With us now is Alexandra Leedy, the aquarium's go-to girl for marketing. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's been so great to talk to the entire team today, you know, getting a really in-depth perspective of the aquarium and a little bit of the behind the scenes between the education and the husbandry. So what happens with the marketing? Because I know the aquarium is pretty busy with a lot of social events and public outreach.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the fun part is that we do have our sister company, Sea Grill. So a lot of our public events, we're able to complement them with food. So that's definitely a fun part. And then we do events all throughout the year. Definitely the holidays are a big one. Now that I've been here a few years, we're starting to build better relationships with the other organizations throughout Guam, and then trying to do more as a joint effort to promote conservation and awareness. And I think the most important thing is that aquariums tend to have a bad rap, you know, when, with people that are a little bit particular with us having
animals that are caged in or in aquariums when they should be free. So what we're really trying to do is to help promote that we're not using the aquarium to try to make money. It's not a cash cow. We're really trying to give our island, which is completely surrounded by the ocean, an opportunity to learn more and to get educated and to see all the creatures up close and really maybe just gain that respect for them so they also feel that kinship to protect them and to do their part to protect the oceans. You know, when we have our beach barbecues and things like that, pick up all of our trash, pick up trash that wasn't even left by you. So things like that. I think the more that we dive into opportunities to promote that, it gets even more fun for us.
Well, and I think you guys are in a really good position that you are doing a lot of conservation work on the grounds with coral replanting and working with some of the local scientists. And so that's always a really nice story to hear. I know you mentioned a lot about helping out with conservation through some of these events. And I know you partner with the Micronesian Conservation Coalition. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what they do and how you partner with them?
Sure. So the MCC, their mission is to develop community connections to educate the youth about the environment and how to get involved with the conservation. And then, of course, supporting local scientific research. And so up until this year, it's been a lot of behind-the-scenes kind of work, and we haven't really – it's been like our husbandry team working with them to do these projects. But now we're really trying to add one more link into that chain and get the public involved. So this past July, July 4th, we had an event, which we do every year. We just drop the admission prices, and we offer a really great group rate. And this year, we increased it just a little bit, only like 10%, and that extra 10% that we added on top of that group rate was entirely donated to MCC. So for the first year, and of course, we're going to continue these partnerships, but this past one, we were able to donate just a little over 1,000, and I think MCC was pretty pleased, too, because they weren't expecting such a big turnout from the public, because obviously the public is... they want to get involved and they want to find ways to support, and especially such an easy way, you know, come enjoy the aquarium, and a part of that will be donated to MCC.
Sure. And what are some of the projects that the Micronesian Conservation Coalition, or MCC, does? Like, where do those donations go? What kind of conservation work do they do?
Well, initially they started with the manta rays, and they were doing a lot of research on them. They were tracking them, seeing... And then working more towards getting the knowledge and research available for the community so that people would know how they could also protect them and do their part. And then now, though, they've expanded into the coral research, and then also partnering with the different organizations, NOAA, the Coral Reef Task Force, or in the Pacific Historical Park. And now it kind of seems like we're really transitioning and moving into the direction of all of our organizations just continually working together for the same cause, and whether that's protecting the corals, increasing awareness, the manta rays, turtles, and then also the sharks. They're trying to increase the awareness that, you know, it's where the sharks aren't always the scary big creatures that they've been painted out to be, mm-hmm. but that we really need to do our part to help them.
And
so I think now it's just really expanded into so much more, but initially they did start with a mission to protect the manta rays.
Well, I think, you know, there's so much out there, and going from manta rays to sharks to fish, it's all important. I'm curious, you know, you speak about the sharks. What is the general attitude towards them on Guam? Are they heavily fished? Are people fairly supportive of the shark populations?
I think that for Guam, it's mostly supportive. I don't believe that they are fished very heavily. It's illegal to sell or trade them, but it's like for us, we do catch some of the sharks and bring them into the aquarium. But for the most part, I mean, even recently, I think it was a couple of months ago, they had a medium-sized shark that was swimming very close to the shore. And it just was all over social media. People were excited about it. It wasn't like a, oh my gosh, sharks are in Tumon Bay, stay clear. People were really excited to see it and happy to see that nobody was trying to pull it out of the water or grab it. It was a really respectful video where it was just showing the shark swimming through the ocean. And so I think that we don't have a real big issue here on Guam about sharks having a bad rap.
Well, there's so many different species of sharks too, and I'm so glad to hear that. Having the sharks in the aquarium, what kind of sharks do you have, and how do the interactions with the public help foster maybe a better understanding of these shark populations?
Well, we have the black tips, white tips, nurse sharks, leopard sharks, and the gray sharks. And I think that what's really been cool is that not only do we have our dive feeds where the public is invited to come and see these animals being hand-fed and see that, you know, it's really a mutually respectful relationship that some of the sharks still, you know, get flipped over and be held by our aquarists and be hand-fed. But also now we offer the Sea Trek tour, and that's inside the aquarium. So we're giving the public the opportunity to go into the water and actually interact. We don't feed the sharks during these dives. We leave that to our seasoned aquarists. But I think that that is really making a difference with showing people that, you know, sharks are friends. It's completely fine. They're not just out to attack or any of the bad things that sometimes people can be raised to believe.
Sure.
So I think having the Sea Trek dive, and especially that we go down to kids 8 years old and up, it's really promoting that this is safe and this is a totally okay environment to put yourself into. And yeah, I think that it's, and then we also have a lot of students from the colleges, the community college, and even high schools. And I think that the biology teachers really appreciate being able to bring them in and have that real close-up and personal educational opportunity for them.
Yeah, I'll have to say I've done a lot of work with the high school biology teachers in Guam, and I've just been so impressed with how much effort they put into their students' curriculum and getting them outside, enjoying some of the marine life in Guam, and also educating them about all the different conservation issues. Now, I know conservation is a big piece of what you do, so how do you connect the aquarium and hosting events with conservation? What kind of events have you done either with the MCC or with other conservation organizations?
Well, our husbandry department is definitely doing that on a daily basis, and I couldn't even begin to tell you all the details of what they do daily. But for myself, we do the International Coastal Cleanup every year. We've probably done it like for the last 8 to 10 years. We've hosted the same site. We're up at Tengizan Beach here on Guam, and every year the turnout is even bigger. So it's really, really great. And then we offer participants really low rates for both lunch and admission into the aquarium after they help out with the cleanup or volunteer at the cleanup site, doesn't matter which one. So I think that's also really helped, because even last year, the numbers were like triple what we had the year before.
Wow, 10 years doing that is a long time. What kind of changes have you seen in the 10 years through the coastal cleanup? Are you getting a lot more community support there?
Yes, definitely. It's a whole lot more. And I think that definitely the schools have a lot to do with it, because we're seeing so many high school, college level students. But it's also nice that we see the families come out, sometimes mom and dad, and they'll bring their two younger kids, and they're planting that seed early that you need to take care of your island and the beaches and the animals, and that everything is codependent on each other. So it's really been great, and it's almost like, or in my opinion, I feel like a few years ago we had to heavily promote it to get the word out there that we were doing this cleanup and that people should come out and participate. But now it's almost like we don't even need to advertise. We just kind of put out what the date is, and everybody comes out. So it's really nice.
That's lovely. And I also know you have a conservation expo coming up, too. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, this is our first annual TASI Expo. TASI is Ocean and Chamorro. We're really excited about that. It'll be our first one, and we invited all of the organizations that we have been fostering relationships with, and they're going to cover a whole broad range of subjects, including the coral bleaching, coral spawning, shark awareness. I think we have like three different groups that are going to talk about sharks and then really delve into the details of it, whether it's the shark fin finning or just shark awareness, and then brown tree snakes. That's such a huge thing here on Guam. So we have a couple of organizations talking about that. And, of course, the sea turtles. And then, like Andrea mentioned, she was involved, I think, three times this year with rescuing the turtles and bringing them here to our aquarium to rehabilitate them before releasing them. So among all those subjects, and then I know I'm missing a few because we have like 15 different groups coming out, and some are the high schools, some are college, and then some are the actual established government organizations. So it's going to be really exciting, and we're not charging anything additional for this event. It's just the admission, since it is going to be hosted inside the aquarium. And yeah, it'll be a whole lot of fun. And I think that all of us, it was such a small island. It's really just so important that we all work together instead of independently trying to achieve the same mission. You know, it's all about protecting and conserving our island. So the more that we work together, the more that we can get accomplished.
I think that's such an important message. And, you know, when you're working in such a remote island and have unique communities, it's really great to be able to reach out to them. And I learned something new from talking to you today, that TASI is Chamorro for ocean.
Yes.
Are there other Chamorro language or culture that you work into your conservation messages at Underwater World?
You know, sometimes we do. Prutahi is protect. So I think this TASI Expo, we haven't formally announced it, so we're trying to determine now whether it's going to be Protehi TASI, which would mean protect the ocean, or if we need to do something a little more broad, since we do have some land conservation guests with us as well. But definitely, we try to keep the culture engaged with it as best as we can. And even for our visitors, I think that we work with Outrigger, our neighbor. Well, they're in our building, but they also are doing a lot to try to increase awareness about conservation. So we work with them a whole lot more, and they're really good about getting the culture tied into our events as well.
Sure. And I know you mentioned, you know, the land, but the land and the ocean seem to be intricately connected. And you mentioned the brown tree snake as one of Guam's major conservation problems or issues. But for those of us who haven't visited Guam, you probably don't know what that means. So can you tell us about this brown tree snake?
Sure. So it is an invasive species to Guam, and we used to have the cocoa bird, which is the rail bird, and it was very populated all throughout the island, I want to say about maybe 30 years ago. And then when the brown tree snake came in, they really ravished on those. So now our Guam cocoa bird is almost extinct. They're only they're very rarely found out in the open, and we have them being protected with the different conservation groups. And we've even had some issues with like power going out because they were tampering with the lines. But it isn't as bad as some people may think. I know there's been some funny articles online about how it's just raining brown tree snakes on Guam. That's not the case. You won't see them every day when you walk outside, but it's definitely just something that messes with the environment because of how much they eat the species that are around. And even the turtles, whenever baby turtles are, or the eggs hatch, sometimes if they're close enough to the ocean, they're eating them right away. So it's definitely something that we could do more about,
And I think that's what the effort is for the conservation. It's just everybody knows it's an issue that we're a little, not a little, we're overpopulated with the brown tree snakes, but there's a lot that we could do to mitigate the problem, and some of us just don't know enough about it and how easy it can be, like putting out these traps that that Department of Agriculture has made available for the brown tree snakes, like these things you put in the trees, and once they climb into it, they just get trapped. They don't get killed, but yeah. Then you would turn them in.
It's an important message and an important lesson. I mean, here in Hawaii, we don't have brown tree snakes, but we certainly deal with our fair share of invasive species and have quite large and unfortunately dwindling native bird population. So it's an important conservation message, whether you're in Guam or Hawaii or any island really in the Pacific. Are there any other pressing ocean conservation issues for Guam that you guys really focus on or that you feel are important to share through your education programs?
I think that we've covered most of it, but one of, like we mentioned with Andrea with the sea turtles, we definitely want to increase the drive of the message that, you know, these turtles, they're already endangered, and we, as awesome as it would be to have in your backyard or to have in your tanks at home or to surprise your kids with, it's just not worth losing an entire species over. So we definitely want to do more to protect them and to get their voice heard. And then I think we're already really working on getting the coral bleaching message out. And it's interesting because now everybody's talking about it, which is great. We've been working with SeaCorps for several years, as Andrea mentioned, but it wasn't so much public knowledge about how bad we really were. And now we have the Guam Hotel and Restaurant Association, the Guam Chamber of Commerce, all of these big organizations are finally addressing these things. Like today I have a Guam Hotel and Restaurant Industry meeting, and that's the highlighted topic, coral bleaching. And they have a guest speaker from NOAA coming in because now, you know, better late than never, of course. I wish that we had realized it sooner, but we're finally trying to make a move as an island to get this under control and to get it protected and do what we can to stop it, I think.
Well, that is a really great message to end on, because I think that is important and nice to see that, you know, when commerce is taking an interest in the environment. And so pleased to hear
really
about
is.
That.
It really is. Like, to be honest, when I saw the email pop up, I was like, wow, this is really great, because you wouldn't really expect it to come from these organizations to make it the highlight of the meeting that, hey, this is a huge issue and it's now time for everybody to be aware and do your part. No excuses anymore.
Absolutely. So with all this exciting stuff coming up with the trash cleanups and the conservation events and the TASI Expo, where can people go to learn more about Underwater World and the events that you guys have?
I'd recommend Facebook first, because Facebook, you know, we can just update it literally on the fly as we go throughout the day. And Facebook is UWWGuam. Or facebook.com/UWWGuam. Mm-hmm. And then second, visit us on our website. It's usually up to date within a couple of days. But then especially if you want a fast, or if you have questions and want a fast reply, Facebook is the best.
Well, that's wonderful. Alex, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us. I'm looking forward to hearing more about these events and following up on all of the really exciting coral spawning work that you guys are doing and beach cleanups and coastal cleanups. I want to give a big thanks today to all of my guests for taking some time to share about some of the exciting work going on in Guam and Underwater World, especially thanks to you. Looking forward to working with you with Falcor later this year. I'm Carly Weiner. Now let's get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.